This podcast is brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hi, this is Susie Quattro on Gavin Wood's podcast.
If you don't know who the undisputed queen of rock is, then I can't help you. One of the most recognized rock acts of the last 50 years. Let's go down Devilgate Drive to Can the Can. I could go on, but I'm excited to speak to the amazing Susie Quattro. Hi, Susie.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm very humbled to be speaking to rock and roll royalty. Now, does that sit well with you?
Absolutely. I'll just do my royal wave. I've always been called the queen of rock and roll since my first hit, and I wear it with graciousness.
I'm glad. Well, first hit, Can the Can, Devilgate Drive, 48 Crash, The Wild One, and The Smash with Chris Norman and from Smokey, Stumbling In. 63 singles, 18 studio albums released, and you've sold nearly 60 million records worldwide. You've done pretty well, kid.
I haven't done bad, have I? Sometimes when I look back on it, you know, especially like when I was watching my 2019 released Susie Q documentary made by Liam Furniture from Australia. You do kind of go, what? I did all that? And I'm still going. I'm still making new records, and it's crazy. But I did get in this business for a lifetime. I did.
Of course, we never retire.
No.
We're always pixies.
Always.
Now tell me about that little girl in Detroit. Did that little girl ever think that you'd be where you are today?
Yes. That's my honest reply. When I saw, it's a well-documented story, when I saw Elvis on TV at 5 and a half, the Ed Sullivan Show, big show in America, and the family would sit down at 8, the entire family, were 5 kids, but this was normal in America, and watch the Ed Sullivan Show. And at the end of the show, he would bring on something for the youngsters, as he used to say. And I was 5 and a half, remember that, 5 and a half years old. On comes Elvis. He does Don't Be Cruel. My older sister by 9 years starts to scream. And this little five-year-old was looking at her thinking, what's the matter with you? Right? Then I went into the TV and my eyes went into it. And I swear to God, little light bulb on my head. And I thought to myself, I am going to do that. So it's funny. This is like, it was like an instinctual thing. Fated meant to be. I was always going to be in show business. And that's indeed what I did. 60 years now in the business.
Yeah. We had a little show like that in Australia called Countdown that I was lucky to work on. And the whole family used to sit down and the kids used to explain Boy George to Mum and Dad. You know, and that was and that was an impactful show, just like the Ed Sullivan Show. Huge.
And if Molly said, do yourself a favor, you did yourself a favor. Now, you don't know this, but Boy George was just on stage with me at the Palladium in London, November 18th by memory, just last year. Yeah. Nobody knew he was coming on. And Glenn Matlock from the Sex Pistols, the original bass player on bass. And they came out and did Stumbling In with me. The cheer that went up in that audience, I tell you. When I said, I got a friend here to do this song with me, they went nuts. So, and he did a great job. I love Boy. I love George.
That's insane. I saw him at the Hollywood Bowl. And he's touring and loving it, isn't it? It's a whole new lease of life for him.
It is. He's a lovely man. Known him for a long time. And he's a Gemini buddy, so we're good friends.
Oh, so you're 8 personalities in one, the both of you.
At least. Are you kidding? At least, you know, when they call us the twins, you must be joking.
Yeah. Now, let's go back. How was your childhood? How was school and all of that? Was it good with you and your sisters?
I had a wonderful family. Like I said, 5 kids, very close to all of us are very close. A loud, argumentative, very talented family. My dad was a musician. We all play, all 5 of us play minimum 3 instruments each. We were trained in music, so we go up show busy school. I actually did very well. I was good at Shakespeare. I was good at typing. I'm the fastest typer you've ever met in your life. As you're speaking to me, the words are on the page. Touch typer. I take shorthand. Good at sports. Good at music. But I left very young. Because I found music, or rather music found me, you know?
Yeah. So tell me the instruments that you learned.
I read, write, and play classical piano. You can put a piece of music in front of me and I will amaze you and play the piece. I read, write, and play percussion. These are the two instruments I was trained on. Then I picked up bass at 14, self-taught. But once you learn piano, you can learn anything. That is actually your basis for learning. I play piano. I play bass. I'm a very, very good bass player. And I play enough guitar because I didn't go from guitar to bass. That's a big thing. I always make a big thing of it. A lot of bass players start on guitar. They don't quite make it on guitar and they go to bass. I'm not a failed guitar player. I started on the bass in the first band. And then I learned enough guitar that I can play chords and write songs, but I'm not a great guitar player. Don't play with a pick, nothing but fingers. Wow, yeah. So absolutely. So I play four instruments basically.
I started off with bass. I bought a Gibson EB3.
Nice one.
I realized that the lead singer's got all the girls, so I became a lead singer and gave out the bass lessons.
What happened when you found out it didn't work? Sorry.
I love this girl.
So I had to say it.
Yeah, no, I got into radio because I realized I wasn't a very good singer. So you got to know your limitations, huh?
You got to know exactly what you can do and what you can't do. Yeah. That's half the game. Yeah. That is half the game. Knowing what your strengths are. You know this song, you must have heard it, Shine a Light, that I did with Katie Tunstall, from my duet album, Face to Face, which did very well around the world. That's what we talked about on that song, Shine a Light. We had a long discussion, and I told her my mantra is that, you know, we all have a light. Everybody has one. Go inside, find it, turn it on, and never let anybody switch it off. And this is where Shine a Light came from, the song.
Now, growing up with your sisters, there would have been a lot of competition. It would have been hard to get a word in. But what happened when you were basically the chosen one and you had to jettison the sisters?
You know me well enough by now, all these years later. I'm a very honest person, so I say it how it happened. I was told at the age of 17, after 3 years in the band, by a record producer who was eventually to record us, we were having a drink after the show. And he said to me, very strange, but not so strangely. He said to me, you know, one day you're going to have to go because you're the one. And I remember that going into my head as I kind of know that because you do. And it's not even egotistical. It's just, you know, that your path is alone. I knew that. So when the band changed from the Pleasure Seekers to Cradle, four sisters in the band, we started to write our own material. It became heavier before it was a show band. They put me kind of in the back. They relegated me to the back a little bit. So I was more just playing bass. We brought my little sister in, great singer. And it was at this point that Elektra Records saw me with Cradle, offered me a solo contract. Mickey Most flew over from England in the exact same week, saw the band. I was at the back. I did two songs. And he offered me a solo contract. So what the universe is saying to you is, this is your time to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And I knew that. I made my decision emotionally. Oh, it kills you. But business-wise, I knew this was my shot. Yeah. And I took it. Yeah, very lonely. It didn't happen right away. So real, real lonely at first. But I knew where I was going. I knew it.
Well, to have that producer say, you know, I want to record you and all of that, because I was going to ask you about that big jump. And that is a big jump to you know, move from the family and then go to London, because, you know, those big cities are quite lonely. And I'm sure you had quite a lonely time. Yeah,
I sure did. I sure did. When you get a chance, listen to from the Rock Hard album, Lonely is the Hardest. Yeah. That's my song that I wrote about my time in London before I made it. Sure, it's lonely. But even though I cried myself to sleep at night, which I did, never for a millisecond did I consider returning before I accomplished my goal, which was having hit records. I did that.
You weren't going home, were you? You were going to stay there until you did it. And that's the perseverance.
Sure. Oh, you know, we did a word cloud, and this talk of a movie being made of my life now after the documentary. And we started a word cloud. And I asked people I know, people I met, famous people, da da da, give me three words to describe me. And it goes into a big circular word cloud. And the most said word is your center word. And after about at least 1,000 people commenting. Guess what the center word was?
Determined.
You got it.
Ah, I got you.
Wow. Fantastic. Fantastic.
There you go.
And you can't argue with that, can you?
Well, no, you can't. If you're determined and you believe in yourself and you're determined, it works because
exactly.
You don't give up.
No,
and that's
you don't.
What I tell that to everybody. Don't give up.
It's amazing you guessed the word.
You know, and,
right.
Good on you. Tobin Brothers believe every life is unique. Every funeral should be too. Visit tobinbrothers.com.au.
Hi, this is Susie Quattro on Gavin Wood's podcast.
Now, Mike Chapman came into your life, a fellow Aussie. Was he producing with Nicky Chinn at the time?
Nicky Chinn never produced. Nicky Chinn was co-writer, but mainly Nicky was more the business end and Mike was much more the artistic end, as history proved, because once they broke up, Mike went on to have more hits and production. Mike was the real artiste. Mickey had just signed them as songwriters, Mickey Most, and we had just come off the Slade tour. I hadn't had any hits yet. And I was always the writer, always writing and writing and writing and writing. And Mickey said, we can't get this elusive hit single. That's a Chin and Chap one we're great at. And he said, let them come and see the act. Do you mind? They come see the act. Maybe they can produce that magic 3-minute thing of who you are. Mm-hmm. So they did. They came and watched the show. It was all my own material. And they made Can the Can. So they got me. And from there, we started. They kept doing the singles for quite a while. Of course, now I write all my own stuff. But I did all the albums. So it worked out fine. They're good people. Good people.
So I notice in your discography that Mike Chapman's been with you for many, many years.
He has.
Is he still with you?
No, he's now kind of, I would say, probably semi-retired. I don't think he does that now. He lost his wife recently. I think he's kind of just gone back from it a bit. We're still friends, of course, but
is he still living up at Noosa?
No, he sold that and he lives now in London. In an apartment, in a very nice apartment. We're supposed to see each other soon for dinner, but I can say Mike always remained a good friend.
Oh, that's great. I'm so pleased about that. We Aussies tend to stick together a lot, you know. It's the camaraderie and coming off the island, I think.
It is. Island people are island people.
Yes, exactly. So much success right from the beginning, although there was a few years before Can the Can happened. How many years did you have to endure, you know, the loneliness of London, the frustration of trying to get a hit, and all those pressures that you would have put upon yourself? How many years?
I arrived October 1971. I formed the band, finally. I was going crazy. I formed an English band, I think around November 72. Went on that Slade tour. Me, Thin Lizzy Slade, came off that. Mike and Nicky came on board. And by May of 73, I had my first number one.
That's fantastic. Congratulations. And, of course, Double K Drive the next year went to number one as well. So,
Correct.
Man, you were riding the big horse then, weren't you?
I was, and really enjoy Side Saddle too.
So, Susie, I know you thought about it and you had it in your mind that you're going to be a success, but was it really the right place at the right time? I hear that a lot, you know, in people that get success, you know, that all of a sudden the planets align, you're in the right place and things go well. Did that happen to you?
I think everything has is always a map. Yeah. And if you're smart, you follow the map. That was my map. The Americans took a while to recognize that a bass player, a rock and roller female could be good, could do it. So they were a little bit late, but the whole rest of the world discovered it. But I knew it. I knew I was supposed to go with Mickey. The guy from Elektra Records that offered me the first solo contract, he said, I'm going to take you to New York and make you put a male band around you and make you into the next Janis Joplin. No. No, no. Mickey Most, that same week, he said, I'm going to take you to London and make an album with you and make you the first Susie Quattro.
Yes.
It's kind of a no-brainer, isn't it?
That's more enticing, I believe.
I think so, yes. I wasn't James.
And also in the early 70s, you know, coming out of Carnaby Street in the 60s, the Beatles, Rolling Stones, and, you know, it was still, you know, a big, big market over there. Lots of record buyers, you know, looking for new music. So it would have been really fertile for you.
It was, and it was, people still talk about it now, the shock. I get it all the time. The shock of seeing me on Top of the Pops the first time, a little girl. This is how they say, little girl with a low slung, huge bass. It's not a huge bass. I'm a little bass player with a black leather jumpsuit leading a rock and roll band with three thugs behind her. You know, they kind of went, what is that?
It's me.
And I didn't even know until 2019. I didn't know that what I was doing was unusual. I had no idea. I wasn't manufactured. I wasn't thinking, hey, I'm going to show you. I was just being me. I didn't know what was going to shock the world. And had I known it, it would not have worked.
And aren't you glad they put a Fender bass in your hands?
When we started the band, and it's one of my favorite stories, because when I talk to musicians, you can see them wanting to hit me when I tell them this story. They get angry. When we started the band, 14 years old, all the girls chose an instrument. And I just wasn't quite quick enough to say what I wanted to play. And I was the last one to speak. For some reason, we were all on the phone. And I said, hey, what am I going to play? And my older sister, Patty, she said, you're playing bass. I said, okay, I didn't care. So I went to my dad, who's a musician. I said, Dad, do you have a bass? He said, yes, I do. You can use this one. And he gave me for my first bass, 1957 Fender Precision.
Oh.
See, you have that look too. It's like, how dare you? So it was like giving a first-time driver a Rolls Royce. Yes. But I can't pretend that I knew that this was a great bass. I didn't. All I know was, this is the bass. This is what I play. So it was kind of written in the stars that I was going to be a really good bass player, because that's a hard bass to
yeah.
play.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I didn't know it. All I knew was, this is what I've been given. And this is what I'm going to master.
And you playing fingerstyle and trying to get the chords up that very long fretboard. I mean, you know, as a young thing, you would have had to stretch out a lot.
Yeah, but I'm good at that. I like climbing mountains, you know.
Good on you. Any song can be played at a funeral. What would you like? Visit TobinBrothers.com.au.
Hi, this is Susie Quattro on Gavin Wood's podcast.
We spoke about it just before you released the critically acclaimed Face to Face album with Katie Tunstall. She had, of course, that huge hit with Suddenly I See. How did that association come about for you and KT?
We had met briefly at a big Elvis extravaganza in Hyde Park. I was playing with the TCB band. Yeah. We just said hello, quick hello. And then I was watching the rough cut of my documentary before it came out.
Yeah.
And there she was.
Yeah.
And I was a fan of hers. And I thought, oh, my God, she's a fan of mine. We had a mutual friend. All the footage that you've seen on the videos from Face to Face, except for the live one we did, Overload, that was all done by James, a guy called James. And he was talking to me. And he said, well, yeah, she's a fan. I said, well, I didn't know that. He said, do you want me to set up a meeting? I said, yeah, that would be great. So she called me and invited me to a studio session in London. We talked, we got along right away, and she said, I have this riff. Would you like to write a song with me? I said, sure would. So we did a song remotely, which was Overload. Mm-hmm. Then we did another one remotely, which was Good Kind of Hot. And then I said, KT, there's something going on here. Why don't you come stay at the house for a few days? Let's see what we got. And we started, and we talked. This is how the routine went. We talked for about an hour on a subject, whatever subject came that was floating around. And at some point, we sat on my carpet in my front room where I do all my songwriting. At some point during this discussion, and we would make notes as we were talking too, all of a sudden we go, pick up my bass, she pick up her guitar, and a song presented itself. So this is quite a magical, I know, quite a magical
wow.
thing. Yeah, a real journey for both of us, very emotional journey. And we made a terrific album. Terrific album.
That's incredible. What chemistry?
It was, this is the way I explain it. I am an in-the-fire person. That's me. I will see a fire of problems in front of me. I don't go around it. I go into it. Mm-hmm. I let it burn me, and then I go out the other side. She observes the fire. Yeah. So I pulled her into the fire and made her burn, which she didn't always like because it was expose time, you know? Mm-hmm. And she put me out of the fire and showed me I didn't have to burn all the time. So we traded these lessons. But during the course of writing this album, we became emotionally naked. You know, we did. We really did. And it's a good friendship, and I love it dearly. And we're very proud of what we created.
Excellent. It's like a yin and yang, and then becomes yin.
Absolutely. And we developed a trust. There were uncomfortable things, you know, everybody that's got the album knows that, obviously uncomfortable subjects, but somehow we just kept going. I would find things, you know, embarrassing to say, and she would, but as they got said, all of a sudden there you've got a song.
I'm going to ask the undisputed queen of rock and roll, how are the kids?
The kids are fine. I work with my son. I have done since 2009, Richard. We're two albums in, they've charted, great critic. So he's really come into his own. He's a guitar player and a songwriter. And he also produced and played on Uncovered, my 6-track EP of covers. And he also, by KT's suggestion, I never would have pushed him. She asked him to produce face to face.
Oh, so, okay.
And fantastic. So we are now assembling and writing together songs for my next solo album.
So do you think he'll join the On the Road band?
I don't know. I don't want him to do that. I don't want him to be an appendage to me, and that's what he's known for. I want him to. I don't mind working with him in the studio, writing with him. That's great. But I want him to find his. So he should have his own band. My daughter is a singer. She's not a writer, but she's a singer. She's a very good singer. She's good on the radio. She didn't want the business as much as Richard did, although she's a very good singer. Yeah. So I've got two kids, and my granddaughter is 22, and she's studying philosophy at King's College in London. So
high achievers, huh?
Well, yeah. Good. They're good kids, yeah.
Congratulations. Now, you and your husband, Rania Haas, you live in different countries, and I've thought about that. I reckon that would be pretty perfect.
It's absolutely perfect. If you would have told me that I would like this kind of relationship when I was with my ex for 20 years, and we worked together as well, who I have my two kids with, my granddaughter, I would have said no. It took me a while to get used to it, but it's perfect. You know, you have your space when you want it. You have your own caves to live in, and you come together. I go there, he comes here. I go there, he comes here. We bought a place together in Spain. I'm at it now in the apartment. This is our neutral zone. Ah. This is our neutral zone. So because we bought it together, nobody's in charge. So this is kind of like Sweden.
Oh, that works beautifully. Okay, so now you're touring Australia February, March, and this is your 38th tour of Australia, and you're headlining the Red Hot Summer Tour with Cheap Trick and the Angels and John Stevens and Baby Animals, Screaming Jets, Chocolate Starfish. It's a big roll-up of talent there, and you're the headliner. So how does that feel, Susie Quattro?
Correct. She said humbly. Well, I have had a lot of hits. I have sold a lot of records, and you know, I say it on my tour when I'm talking to the audience. We have grown up together, me and Australia. When I first started having my success, I beat the Beatles in sales. Yeah. Then ABBA came along and beat me.
Yeah. You had that big bit in the middle.
I sure did. No, I'm happy with that, yeah. And I will always come back to Australia. It's like my second home, you know. It really is. I love it there.
Well, we love you too. And you've done it before, and I'm sure you can't wait to get out of the beautiful surroundings where you are right now and come down under. So a couple of questions before we go, Susie. What makes Susie Quattro get out of bed every morning?
The fact that I can.
You're giving good answers tonight. I
like
love
that too. The fact that I can't. What a jerk. Okay, yeah, go on.
Now, do you have any hobbies apart from rock and roll and writing songs?
That is everything I do. I'm either writing books. I'm on my, I am just finishing my second novel. That's the truth. I am Dr. Quattro, honorary doctor of music, Cambridge University. Hobbies? No, I think my whole life is taken up with my creativity.
Well, now I can call you Doctor. I was going to call you Leather Tascadero.
Well, you can call me that, but I am Dr. Quattro.
Good on you. Congratulations. That's fabulous.
It's a good thing you had an appointment.
Yes. I just hope I get a prescription when I leave. Now, I mentioned Leather Tascadero. You did 7 episodes in Happy Days. Now, acting, stage.
Annie Get Your Gun, yeah.
Annie Get Your Gun, yes.
And I also wrote one about Tallulah Banker called Tallulah, who played the main role. I love acting. I could have gone that route, you know. But music just kind of took precedence. But I do really like acting. And whenever anything comes along, I've done Minder, Midsummer Murders, Ab Fab, Dempsey and Makepeace. And I've kept good friends with Henry Winkler and Ron Howard. So I made 2 good friends from Happy Days. I'm a natural actress. Ron Howard told me, don't ever take acting lessons. I said, why? He said, because what you do is natural and it would ruin it. Don't mess with it. You're a natural actor. What a compliment.
To hear that from the great Ron Howard, how good is that?
Just the best.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I'd be writing that on my tombstone. Now, what's your favorite food?
Always been Italian. Italian cuisine, my favorite.
Now, name 3 dinner guests, dead or alive.
Jesus. I always would love to meet him. What charisma he must have. Elvis and Billie Holiday.
Yeah, beautiful. Graham Nash actually last week said Jesus.
Well, you know what? No matter what your beliefs are, he must have been Mr. Charisma. Yeah. Oh. I would like to feel the aura around him. He must have been, for all those people to follow him, like I said, whatever your beliefs are. I was born and raised Catholic, but it doesn't matter. The guy existed. To have those people follow him, like he's like the Pied Piper, you know?
Yeah, of course. What would Susie Quattro say to a budding rock chick?
If you're going to pick up an instrument, don't play at it, play it. And remember at all times it's a profession and you must always be professional.
Susie, I'm going to do your tour dates right now, but I just want to say you are a rock star. Thank you so much for your time. See you on the Red Hot Summer Tour next month. You're a darling and I still love you from the moment I met you. You're a rock star and I hope to catch up with you when you're here.
That would be great. Thank you very much and see you soon.
All right, darling. Lots of love.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Let's get into the tour dates for Susie Quattro, headlining her big tour with Cheap Trick, John Stevens, The Angels, Baby Animals, Screaming Jets and Chocolate Starfish. The Red Hot Summer Tour kicks off February 24 at Port Macquarie at Westport Park, February 25 Southport, Broadwater, Parklands, March the 2nd in Bury, New South Wales at the Bury Showgrounds, March 3rd, Bella Vista, New South Wales, at Bella Vista Farm. March 9, Toowoomba, Queensland, at Queen's Park. March 10, Sandstone Point, Queensland, at Sandstone Point Hotel. March 16, Newington in Victoria, Victoria Park in Newington. March 17, Coldstream in Victoria, at Rochford Winery. And March 20 and 21, in Fremantle, at the Fremantle Prison. And the final show of the Red Hot Summer Tour starring Susie Quattro headlining March 23rd at Sepples Field, South Australia, Sepples Field in the Barossa. The Red Hot Summer Tour, touring those dates with Susie Quattro as the headline act with Cheap Trick, John Stevens, The Angels, Baby Animals, Screaming Jets and Chocolate Starfish. This podcast brought to you thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives every day of the year.